Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
375 again. Hit well, deep center, back is Buxton, at the wall, it's gone! Jason Kipnis with his first home run of the year, moving into the leadoff spot and instantly igniting the Indians here today. Drill, deep center, Buxton, he's out of room, it's out of here! Lonnie Chisenhall's third home run of the year, a two-run missile. Santana slugs it, deep left, headed to the bleachers, goodbye! Home run number four for Carlos Santana, so the flip-flop between Kipnis and Santana has played off handsomely here today. 3-1, hit in the air, right field, back is Kepler, he's at the wall, it's gone! Jason Kipnis, a two-out, three-run homer.
We just did a lot of things today that we haven't been doing. Made for a fun day. We needed a day like that. Moving up to the leadoff spot, he knows how important that is there.
I think he knows, has a feel for when I'm coming around with my swing, just like I do. I think he saw what I did, and I think it's safe to say we were in need of a little shakeup before going into this game. Over the last week, we haven't been hitting the way any of us would like, so I thought we both felt it was the right time.
Just didn't muster up anything offensively. I mean, that's the truth of the week. We scored a run in the first off a couple hits. We got a couple hits the rest of the way. It's tough to win when you score a run. It happens during the course of the season. It happens to every team, even good offensive teams. It happened to us last year, and we were one of the better offensive teams. And this team's going to hit and not even slightly worry about it.
Don't give me hyperbole, office-created rules, because I'm not into those things, as you guys well know, about reaching the bag. When you're sliding on dirt and you have momentum, you just keep going. I'm sorry, you just keep going. And there was no malicious intent there whatsoever, so I don't think it breaks the intent of injury. There's nothing to do with injury. The rule does not belong in the game.
My surge is very painful because I tweaked it before, the last time, the last shot I shot. It's hard to tell right now. Definitely couldn't go in that last third quarter of the 6 minutes. We'll see how I get better each day. Did he step under it, like a purpose? No. He was contesting a shot. It was shot clock was coming down. I'll have to see the play.
A two-step lead with your foot closeout is not appropriate. It's dangerous. It's unsportsmanlike. It's just not what anybody does to anybody else. And this particular individual has a history with that kind of action. Totally unnatural closeout that the league has outlawed years ago and pays great attention to it. And Kawhi's not there. And you want to know how we feel about it. You want to know if that lessens our chances or not. We're playing very possibly the best team in the league. 9.75 people out of 10 would figure the Warriors will beat the Spurs. Well, we've had a pretty damn good season. We've played fairly well in the playoffs. We're up 23 points in the third quarter against Golden State. And Kawhi goes down like that. And you want to know if our chances are less, and you want to know how we feel, that's how we feel.
Zaza's not a dirty player. I mean, you got to time that perfectly if you want to hurt somebody. I mean, we're not that type of team. Kawhi's an unbelievable player. We got nothing but respect for him. But he just tried to contest the shot, man. Guys were playing hard. It was an unfortunate situation. I wish it didn't happen. I don't think it was intentional. I mean, you can't listen to people on Twitter. They're irrational.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
In other words, I think what we all just heard from Greg Popovich there toward the end of that montage right before Kevin Durant is,
oh, bitch.
That's pretty much what it was. Welcome to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Toledo's sports leader up here having a great Monday. Thanks for being a part. You heard a lot of stuff there because we got a lot of stuff to talk about in the next 2 hours of outstanding awesome. Heard a little bit of baseball there, the Indians, and manager for Terry Francona after they broke open the can of whoop-tush, if you will, on the Minnesota Twins in Game 3 of their three-game series, avoiding the sweep. They busted it out, four home runs, and about time they got some offense going because things are not looking good offensively for the Indians. Heard a little bit of Brad Ausmus there of the Tigers as well. Joe Maddon, of the Cubs on the slide rule. We'll get into that a little bit later on, and also some other suggested rules that Joe Maddon had for us. And then, of course, the big story in basketball yesterday, the 25-point lead that the San Antonio Spurs had on the supposedly invincible Golden State Warriors on the road at Golden State in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. A 25-point lead that was wiped out literally immediately following Kawhi Leonard's ankle being wiped out by Zaza Pachulia in one of the most controversial plays you're going to see in some time. When I say wiped out, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. At the time of the injury to Kawhi Leonard, or the re-aggravation of the ankle injury that he kind of came into this series with 7:53 left in the third quarter, from that moment on, the Warriors went on an 18-0 run, first of all, to put that game into single digits and make it the closely contested game that it was the rest of the way. But to finish it off, from that point on, 7:53 left in the third, the Warriors would score 58 points. The Spurs just 33 more. Yeah, you can do that math. That's plus 25. From that point on, Kawhi Leonard's absence left the Spurs going 13 for 35 and 0 for 7 from 3 with only 4 assists. And from that point on, the Warriors shot 21 of 36, flat out scorching, 6 out of 17 from 3. We all know Steph Curry went off for 40, Kevin Durant for 34, I believe it was. They had 11 assists from that point on. It was a totally different game. From plus 25 to, actually plus 23, I think it was, to minus 2 at the end of the game on that 25-point differential. That's what it was yesterday as Kawhi Leonard was taken out by Zaza Pachulia, and that's something we're going to start with this afternoon right here on the Extravaganza. Frank Gargano and Jim Kushlin are along as well. Mr. K, great job, obviously, with that montage.
Thank you.
You know, this is so difficult for me because as time has gone on, I've become more and more in the same mindset as my friend Dennis Maniloff, who is out of Cleveland, who is a frequent guest. In fact, he'll be a guest at 4 o'clock, 4:05 or so, 4:10 or so this afternoon, to talk about game one of the Western Conference Finals and Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, which, of course, is tonight in Boston with the Wizards and the Celtics fighting to become the prey of the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals. And as time has gone on, the more and more episodes of Greg Popovich being an ass to reporters, be it on the sidelines or be it in post-game press conferences, whatever it is, the more I join D-Man's line of thinking about what, quite simply, what he is, what an ass Greg Popovich is. And it makes me dislike him more and more and more. I will say the fact that he continues to pop off, no pun intended, on political matters from his pulpit in the basketball world bothers me a great deal because I am 100% opposite of him on political matters. It makes me dislike him more, which puts me in a very, very awkward position right now. I want to tell him to stop whining and crying and to stop about Pachulia undercutting Kawhi Leonard on that jump shot. But conflicting me and forcing me to sit here with splinters in my arse because I'm riding on a wooden fence is the fact that I really, really like and respect Kawhi Leonard so much. And I hate what happened to him. And I got dual things here, and this is ultimately what's going to probably be the deciding factor for me. I despise the Warriors with the passion of 1,000 flaming suns, white-hot intensity. I cannot stand the Warriors. It makes me sick to my stomach to see them come back from that 25-point deficit. It galls me to see them with their smirks and their smiles about, oh, it was just a good closeout. What Kevin Durant at the end there say? He's unfortunate. I don't want to see it happen. I feel terrible that it happened. No, you don't. You're probably glad that it happened because with Kawhi Leonard, you guys were getting your arses handed to you. He was taking it to you in 23 minutes of play. Kawhi Leonard had 26 points and 8 rebounds. And there were still 19 minutes of play left. imagine the number he was going to throw up. And imagine the fact that he was going to win by double digits, at least, he and his Spurs, in Oakland, game one of the Western Finals. And what kind of a psyche, or what kind of a psychological effect that would have on their psyche in Oakland. That, to me, is a big deal. Don't tell me you're sad that it happened, Kevin Durant. No, you're not. And I'm not saying that Zaza Pachulia tried to injure Kawhi Leonard either. I'm not saying that at all. I am saying he certainly didn't do anything to avoid it from happening. Does it make it a dirty play when somebody does something that has a moderate to high probability of hurting somebody, but it is not your intention to hurt them? It's just not your intention to make sure you don't hurt them. And I know that's a little odd sounding because I used kind of a double negative there. But it's not your intention to go out of your way to hurt him, but it's not your intention to go out of your way to make sure you're out of his way, if that makes sense, so that he doesn't land on your foot, thus injuring or re-injuring his already very delicate ankle. That's what I'm saying. Is it dirty if you don't do something to be clean? Or is it only dirty if you intentionally do something to be dirty? Again, I'm not trying to be really confusing about this, but there was a really good debate that I heard this morning on First Take about that. Is it dirty if all you do is put your body part in a position where it might happen? I don't know. If it does happen, it's not my fault. I mean, the guy just landed where he landed. I mean, it's kind of happenstance. You know, my foot is only, you know, what is the average foot, let alone an NBA, what, about 4 inches wide, maybe 5 inches wide? I'm looking down at my foot right now. Yeah. In a shoe, maybe 5 inches wide. He could land all over the place there. It's not going to hit my shoe. It's not my fault if he does. Is that dirty that the shoe is even a part of that equation? Or do you have to be having an intent to injure? I don't think the Warriors intended to injure him. But I do think Pachulia was very, very careless and reckless. And if it did injure him, well, you know, that's just the breaks. That's just the way that it goes. So I despise the Warriors, and for that I want to say call it dirty, call it flagrant, give them a, you know, throw Pachulia out for a game, do something to make the Warriors pay for the dirty shot, simply because I want to believe it's dirty because it's Golden State. But part of me wants to say, shut up, Popovich, you're being such a punk about this, and such a whiny malcontent, like you're always a whiny malcontent, and you always treat media so poorly. I kind of like, you know, the hell with you. I'm glad it happened. But then I guess the tiebreaker is probably my fondness for Kawhi Leonard. I have a soft spot for this guy because you want to know why? What's the last thing that you ever heard Kawhi Leonard say that was controversial? Jim Cushman? Tell me the last thing Kawhi Leonard said that was controversial, or was insulting, or was demeaning, or that was cursing, or that was braggadocious. Tell me any of those things.
I am unable to do so because I cannot recall any such instance.
Tell me the last thing you heard Kawhi Leonard say, period.
What I just played in the montage.
Probably there. That's it, right?
Yep.
I don't think Zaza was trying to hurt me.
Right.
Hey, even now he's trying to be really nice and correct, politically correct, if you will. What's the last thing you heard Kawhi Leonard say before that?
No. Yeah, I can't remember.
Frank, Kawhi ever say anything you heard? Is Frank on the phone? You gotta let me
know. No, I haven't heard anything.
I mean, that's the point. He is not controversial. Not only does he not say controversial things, he doesn't just say anything. He's quiet. He's humble. He goes about his business of being arguably the best two-way player in basketball. Arguably the best player in basketball, arguably if not the best player in basketball, the close runner-up to LeBron James because he plays the game in such a similar way. I love Kawhi Leonard for that reason. Not to mention, I just love guys who do it the Kawhi way. You know what Kawhi Leonard was not when he came into the NBA? He was not LeBron James back. You know what LeBron James back says, right? The chosen one. The chosen one. From shoulder blade to shoulder blade, the chosen one. He wasn't the Sports Illustrated chosen one. Kawhi Leonard was nothing like that. He didn't have this immediate Superman impact on the league as a rookie. He came in as a very average rookie and got better his second year and better his third year and better his fourth year. And the numbered climb is just simply amazing. The defensive prowess, by the way, was there from the beginning. But he has worked at his craft, at becoming one of the NBA's prolific offensive producers in passing and in scoring and in shooting and in attacking. He has gotten so much better. It did not come as easy for him as it did for Le Chosen One. That's not a knock on LeBron, by the way. It's just a point. You know, there are a lot of guys who came in, you know, Kobe Bryant. There are guys who came into the league who were just, you know, spectacular from Jump Street. Kawhi wasn't. He worked and improved himself, and I love that. And I love the fact that he had his team on the verge of stealing game one from Golden State at and home court advantage they're in at Oakland yesterday. And then he got taken out by that play by Pachulia. So a number of questions here that we'd like to talk about at 866-240-1065. Number one, do you think it was a dirty play? Do you think it was a dirty play? Number two, if Kawhi Leonard had not gotten hurt, I think we can all agree. Yes, Frank and Jim, can we agree that if Kawhi doesn't get hurt there, the Spurs are not coughing up a 25-point lead?
Oh, no question.
They win this game.
He was on a roll. I mean, who knows what he would have ended up with. I mean, what was it, 26
and 23 minutes?
And then as soon as he goes down, it becomes an 18-0 Warriors run to get back into the thing.
Yeah, Spurs win that game.
And he had 26 points in 23 minutes. And I don't know if he would have played the whole fourth quarter because of the, you know, circumstances with his ankle. And if the lead had kind of kept up, they probably would have rested a little bit. But you know, you can assume he's going to probably have a 35-point night. And if he kept going, a 40-point night. Just spectacular against, you know, the loaded Golden State Warriors. So the Kawhi Leonard injury is obviously a game changer and it's a series changer. I'm not willing to say that the Spurs would have won the series had they won that game and Kawhi had not been hurt. But we're never going to know now because of Pachulia. So question one is, do you think what Pachulia did was dirty? Or was it just incidental? I'm closing out on the shot. My momentum took me one more step through. My foot happened to go underneath Kawhi Leonard, where his landing spot would have been. It's nothing I can do about that. I played aggressively and closed out on the shot. And then as he shot it, I turned around to look and see if it was going in or not. And my momentum kept me going that way. And there, was it incidental, happenstance, or was it a dirty play? And can you call it a dirty play if he did not have an intent to injure? That's the question I want you to think about and answer at 866-240-1065 regarding Pachulia's. The second thing is, do you think it mattered or it would have mattered in the overall series? That do you still think the Spurs would have won or the Warriors would have won just in five instead of a four-game sweep? Or did you already think it was going to be a five-game series and now it might have been six? Or do you really think that it might have actually flipped it over? Spurs now have home court advantage. Or at least it's, you know, the three out of the next six are in their building. Would you have seen it that way? And that maybe they actually would have taken down the Warriors. Those are the two big questions that come from that right now. I heard one of you guys start. Go ahead, Jim.
You know, and for me, my answers to those two questions are one, I don't necessarily think it was dirty as much as Zaza Pachulia is just kind of awkward in this. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, a very similar play involving Pachulia is what sidelined Kevin Durant for a little while during this season. Almost the same kind of play where he landed on him after a shot, if I'm not mistaken. So if anything, it just tells me that, okay, he may not be dirty despite some of the things that Greg Popovich is trying to say out there. It just makes him the same awkward Zaza Pachulia that he's always been. As for flipping or...
Well, hold on. Before you go on there, let's hear exactly what Greg Popovich said. We had a small little taste of it there in the montage. This is the longer version of Greg Popovich going off on Zaza Pachulia, not just for his play last night that injured Kawhi Leonard, but for his history.
A two-step lead with your foot closeout is not appropriate. It's dangerous. It's unsportsmanlike. It's just not what anybody does to anybody else. And this particular individual has a history with that kind of action. You can go back and look in Dallas games where he got a flagrant two for elbowing Patty Mills. The play where he took Kawhi down and locked his arm in Dallas and could have broken his arm. Ask David West, his current teammate, how things went when Zaza was playing for Dallas and he and David got into it. And then think about the history he's had and what that means to a team, what happened last night. A totally unnatural closeout that the league has outlawed years ago and pays great attention to it. And Kawhi's not there. and you want to know how we feel about it. You want to know if that lessens our chances or not.
I'm going to pause here just again, because this is what Dennis has talked about for so long, and I totally agree with. If you could see, I'm playing video for you now, the audio portion of the video, and I'm looking at the video. The disgust and the disdain that Popovich has on his face for the reporters asking the question that has to be asked. Pop, how do you feel about what happened to your star? That is a question that is a simple, must-ask question, because we need some quotes for the paper. We need some quotes for our broadcast. How do you feel about Kawhi going down now? Of course we know you're going to say bad. Of course we know you're going to say it hurts to lose our best player. But we have to hear you say it so that we can quote you, so that we can share your feelings with the fans. Our job as broadcast journalist or as print journalist, Greg Popovich, is to be the liaison between you, the public figure, and the fans who pay to watch your teams play. That's it. We have to ask you how you feel about it. We have to ask you how you deal with it. We have to ask you how you feel it affects the series. Does it affect the series positively or negatively? No, we don't expect you to say positively. We know you're going to say negatively. It's your best player, and he's out. Or he's hurt. But we have to ask it so we can hear you say it and tell the fans exactly how you said it. So stop being an ass to everybody that asks a question. It's just getting to be really, really tiresome.
And you want to know how we feel about it. You want to know if that lessens our chances or not. We're playing very possibly the best team in the league. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in the East. And 9.75 people out of 10 would figure the Warriors will beat the Spurs. Well, we've had a pretty damn good season. We've played fairly well in the playoffs. I think we're getting better. And we're up 23 points in the third quarter against Golden State. And Kawhi goes down like that. And you want to know if our chances are less?
Yeah, we do. We don't want to know. We already know your chances are less, but we need to hear you address that fact. That's the way the world works. You've been in this job for 20 years. You know the way the world works. Stop acting like this is some sort of a conspiracy to get under your nerves. They have a job to do, and you have a job to do, and yours should be stop acting like an ass. You know what? You know how they find, how much did they find Coach Fizdale from Memphis? For saying that going on that rant and then take that for data. How much did they fine him? $30,000, something like that?
I don't remember the exact number. We're double-checking that. That sounds like it could be in the neighborhood, though.
I think it was around $30,000. Yeah. They fine coaches for criticizing officials. That's about the only thing they fine coaches for in post-game press conferences. You know what I would like them to do? I would like them to have a czar of coaches and media relations, etc. And I think they should fine coaches just for acting like asses.
And we have confirmed it was 30.
That's what I thought. Thank you. You know what I mean? I mean, fine a coach just for not doing his job properly. The media has a job to do. By contract, Greg Popovich, what's Popovich's deal? What's his deal, his financial deal? What's Pop's contract? I would like to know exactly how much he's making per season. Because whatever that amount is, yeah, it's not just for coaching the team. It's built in to his deal that he must provide media access to those covering the team and the league, because the broadcasters, the networks, demand access so that the fans can hear from the principals involved. The print journos who help publicize these games demand it as well. This is how they all make money. Greg, these media guys who are asking you questions right now that you hate are making you money. And you yourself are profiting handsomely for this part of your contract. How much does he make? Do you guys have that?
It's a 5-year, $55
million. $11 million per year.
Yep, through 18-19.
To not just coach practices and games, but also to talk to the media. It's part of your job description. Well, if you're going to do your job description this poorly, then take some of his money away. Fine his angry, surly arse. That's what I say about Popovich. Let me finish this this mess.
And you want to know how we feel? That's how we feel. He would have played, and they'd ended up winning. I go get dinner, have a glass of wine, wake up the next day, go to practice, and move on.
You have a glass of wine every single press conference. W-H-I-N-E.
This is crap. And because he's got this history, it can't just be, oh, it was inadvertent. He didn't have intent. Who gives a damn about what his intent was? You ever hear of manslaughter? You still go to jail, I think, when you're texting and you end up killing somebody. But you might not have intended to do that. All I care is what I saw. All I care about is what happened. And the history there exacerbates the whole situation and makes me very, very angry.
Now, after that dressing down of the media and that angry diatribe that he went on, then he has the nerve to say, by the way, I'm just a fun-loving guy.
But I'm still open to follow-ups.
Yeah, I know. I just embarrassed you all, and I just made fun of you for your questions because you asked me how I feel about this and what we think of our chances now. And I know I just made fun of you, but please ask more questions. Aren't I hilarious? Ha, ha, ha. Honest to God, I want somebody to shove a basketball up this guy's nose. I really, really do. But having said all of that, my disdain for Popovich, which is really, really growing and growing and growing, is offset a little bit by my fondness for Kawhi Leonard, who I really, really respect, and my disdain for the Warriors, perhaps, which is even stronger than that of Greg Popovich. Was it a dirty play or not? Want you to vote for us, or vote for it, I should say, at Sports Radio 106.5, Sports Radio 106.5 on Twitter. I want you to dial 866-240-1065. And hey, before we take our bottom of the hour Sports Center timeout, want to say congratulations to the winner of our Ugly Driveway Contest, the Ugly Driveway Contest that we held at 1065theticket.com, courtesy of our friends at Buck Brothers and, of course, ESPN 1065, The Ticket. The winner was Tom Haggerty of Maumee. Tom Haggerty, congratulations to you. If you'd like to see a picture of his butt-ugly driveway, busted and broken as it is, take a look at it. It's on our website now at 1065theticket.com. Congratulations, Tom Haggerty, and thanks to our friends at Buck Brothers for providing him with that new driveway. And we're back after the Sports Center coming up next right here on The Ticket.
Calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
All right, 3:41 now as we roll onward on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, Bob France with you on the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin is here. Frank Gargano is here. We want you to be here, too, at 866-240-1065. Dennis Maniloff will be here at about 4:10 talking about the NBA postseason. Once again, Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinal between Boston and Washington is tonight. John Wall trying to build on that Game 6 buzzer-beater winner. And advance to the Cavaliers in the to Cleveland, where they would face the Cavaliers. Of course, if Boston holds on, they're the top seed. Then the Cavaliers would go to Boston on Wednesday in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
And incidentally, programming note real quick, we'll have that Game 7 for you tonight, 7 o'clock, the coverage time here on The Ticket.
Thank you very much, good sir. And then, of course, last night was Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. We'll get back to some basketball in a bit. If you want to weigh in on it, like I said, please do so at 866-240-1065 or Sports Radio 1065 on Twitter. Now, to baseball, because we started some of that on the montage today as well. A little bit different. We played you Popovich, a Popovich rant, which I'm of mixed feelings about. I don't disagree with him necessarily on Pachulia, but I just dislike him so much it's kind of hard for me to care. I do like Joe Maddon. Cubs manager Joe Maddon is a little bit different because he's a very, very good guy. It's like Terry Francona. That's why it was really amazing last year, you know, in the postseason, because it's kind of hard to root against either one of those stories or either one of those managers because they're both so very likable and both so very good. At any rate, Joe Maddon found himself in a very, very difficult situation here, and that was trying to explain his feelings on, well, it wasn't difficult for him. It's just difficult for baseball. Let's put it that way. On Major League Baseball slide rule, and every time we see one of these cases, I talk about it, and I completely agree with Joe Maddon. They're taking the baseball out of baseball. They're taking aggressiveness and hard base. Now, I'm not saying any baseball player should be allowed to go out of the baseline at second base, spikes, crotch high, trying to take out a shortstop or cave in his knee or any of those crazy things when trying to break up double plays.
Right, whereas,
I have never. I'm sorry?
Right, we're essentially not advocating for the Ty Cobb rules of the bases.
Yeah, I've never, ever, ever said that they should be allowed to do that. However, They have to be allowed to slide hard while attempting to get the base. And then, you know, as the fielder, of course, has to also touch the base before he makes his relay throw, whatever happens, happens. That's just the nature of the game. And we all know the slide rule now, and it was applied again on Saturday as Cubs rookie Ian Happ slid into second base hard. And he slid into second base perhaps a half a second late because he did go past the bag a little bit. But again, not spikes high, not in any attempt to injure whatsoever, just going to second base hard to prevent a good throw from doubling up the hitter, which was Anthony Rizzo. And the way the umpires called it is probably correct. The umpires, correctly, because of the new rule, declared not only was Happ out at second, automatically ruled that Rizzo was out at first, negating a run scored on the same play by Kyle Schwarber, who was on third. The umpires got the call right. The problem isn't with the umpires, according to Joe Maddon. The problem is with the rule that the umpires are forced to follow. And this is what we had a little bit of again in the montage. Here is a more extended version of Cubs manager Joe Maddon following that game.
I have no idea why these rules are a part of our game. That had a tremendous impact on today's game, where outs are rewarded based on a fabricated rule. It is created under the umbrella of safety, which I totally disagree that was a non-safe play that Happer made. Schwarber just did it a couple weeks ago. Exactly the same. When you slide directly over the bag and you're called out where there's no chance for runner to be thrown out at first base, and there was nothing egregiously dangerous on the part of our runner. No, and don't give me hyperbole and office-created rules, because I'm not into those things, as you guys well know, about reaching the bag. When you're sliding on dirt and you have momentum, you just keep going. I'm sorry, you just keep going. And there was no malicious intent there whatsoever, so I don't think it breaks the intent of injury. There's nothing to do with injury. The rule does not belong in the game. It's very, and I'm not blaming the umpires. The umpires do a great job. Mike did what he had to do. And I told him that. I said, you did what you had to do, but I cannot disagree more with the spirit of this rule under the umbrella of preventing injury. And if you just roll back the tape a little bit, Dexter, good slide into second base. Great slide where he upended Tommy. But that was much more egregiously dangerous than Happer's slide, and we get called out at first base. So there's a tremendous disconnect there, and I think in my whole life, and I think in general, I think we have a tendency to micromanage stuff that we have no business attempting to do. That and the play at the plate while I'm at it. The play at the plate also under the umbrella of protectionism, where the other day Coughlin here jumped over the catcher's head in an attempt to avoid a collision and almost broke his neck. So don't give me all this protectionism injury stuff, because I'm not buying into it. I think it's wrong. I think it's tough for the umpires to have them enforce rules which they know it's not part of the game. They know that the game was not intended to be manipulated in a sense where you lose based on a fabrication, where we could have scored a run there, made the game entirely different, but we're out where there's no play at first base whatsoever. None. So don't tell me that's protectionism. Don't tell me a middle infielder was protected. And don't tell me a middle infielder was in danger right there. None of that holds up. So I'd like to see that rule ejected. I'd like to see the rule at the plate ejected. They have no place in our game.
I could not possibly agree more with Cubs manager Joe Maddon, because yeah, Joe Maddon is spot on, because baseball has indeed become, you know, far too concerned with protectionism, as he said, and less so with baseball. And again, now what's strange here is I want to be clear about this. We talked about this some last week. Whenever we see the high fastballs going at people's heads and hitting people like Jacoby Jones and the Tigers in the face, which I think was an accident. But then, of course, we saw the Chris Sale situation with Boston. We continue to see these, you know, these purpose pitches against the Orioles going up high and tight. Manny Machado having to almost got hit in the helmet, ended up hitting his bat. You know, guys getting thrown behind. All of this stuff, to me, that's what's strange about this, guys. baseball wants to look out for the safety of their players, so we're going to call the runner out at first if the guy running from first to second slides in too hard to second base. We got to protect that middle infielder. We're going to call the guy at the plate out if he doesn't get down and avoid any collision with the catcher at home plate on a close play in which he might try to jar the ball loose because we don't want the catcher getting hurt. But we're not going to institute any rules whatsoever that say if you throw one accidentally or not, up above the shoulders and inside the batter's box, you are ejected immediately. And I'm talking about fastballs, not curveballs that don't break right either. We're not going to do anything to protect those batters. That's the hypocrisy of it all. If they were cared really and were concerned about player safety in baseball, they would be worried about the batters standing there taking those pitches. Now, having said all that, Joe Maddon then went on a bit of an extended rant about this issue, using some humor and using some sarcasm to make his point. If they're going to worry about protecting players, he said this yesterday morning, from hard slides and that sort of thing, well, then you know what? Quote, he said, I have some other additions to the rule. Joe Maddon said, and Jim and Frank, feel free to respond to these. We should eliminate the head first slide. That's a dangerous slide. Your hand could get hurt. Your eye could get poked out. All these different things can happen on a head first slide. What do you think? It sounds about as reasonable to me as sliding with your feet, but going a little bit too far past the bag. The runner could get seriously hurt if he dives head first. Yes or no?
Yeah.
I vote for the change. Joe Maddon style change. Yes?
Yeah, no
Why
question.
Not? Right? I mean, it's
baseball.
Stupid.
If you're going in for a hard slide, whether you go head first or feet first, it's always a dangerous play. It's professional sports.
And not only that, if you go in head first or with your hand, as Madden is saying there, and you touch the bag with your hand just at the same time that the shortstop or the second baseman is touching the bag with his cleat, he could destroy your hand for crying out loud. We can't allow that to happen. You go head first, then that's it. You're automatically out. Madden continued. I think face masks should be mandatory for all hitters. And pitchers have been hit in the head by line drive several times, so pitchers should be forced to wear helmets. End quote. Now, he's being sarcastic, obviously. But I will admit, in the interest of full disclosure, you've probably heard me in the last couple of years on this radio program saying, every time I see a fastball come back and drill a pitcher in the head or neck or shoulder area on a line drive, I say pitchers ought to be wearing helmets. I mean, because your reaction time is none. I mean, you're throwing a 95-mile-an-hour heater that's turning around on a swing and coming back at you 140 miles an hour. Even the best, you know, glove work isn't going to protect most pitchers if it's in the right spot or the wrong spot, as it were. I don't know if I could even imagine pitching in the big leagues without a helmet on. I have suggested it would be something I would want to do. Now, does that mean they should make it mandatory? Obviously not. Would you guys, I mean, whenever we see these, either one of those things, you know, the fastball that hits somebody right in the mouth, like Jacoby Jones had, he's, of course, now with the Mudhens, while, you know, he tries to get hot and make his way back up to the big league club in Detroit. But whether that happens or you see that line drive right back that catches a pitcher right in the face or right in the neck or right in the whatever, I got to tell you, when I see those kinds of things, I think, you know what, the game maybe ought to evolve. Maybe they ought to think about better protectionary equipment. Is protectionary a word? Well, it is now. Protective is the word. Better protective equipment given, you know, the circumstances of modern-day baseball. What do you guys think?
You know, when I think of that, my first thought is I would wonder if they're even able to do their normal motions, you know, depending on the size of the helmet or something like that. But I've always thought, yeah, in such a world, if one wanted to, I don't see a problem with that. I question the mandatoriness of it because you know it'll be fought tooth and nail.
But I think
levels.
Of it like hockey. Hey, Gargano, yeah. You're the hockey guy. Think about it. We talked to this about this before when helmets were first brought into the game. They were made mandatory, but if you started playing your career before they made the new rule, you're grandfathered in, and you can keep playing without it as long as you want. So, you know, don't make it mandatory, Kush, for guys. Or let's say we're going to make it mandatory starting in, you know, 2019 or something like that. You know, and if you don't want to do it, you don't have to, but anybody who's new to the game starting in 2019, we're going to work on the next generation, and over the course of the next 10 years, as all of the current players retire, everybody will be doing it after that point. What do you think?
But my thinking on that, first off, is baseball does have a tiny bit of precedent on this exact kind of thing. Indians fans, you'll vaguely remember, I know I did as a teenager, that final season of Dave Winfield. He was one of the guys that was grandfathered. Any Indians fans remember in that 95 season, the few times you saw him, Dave Winfield had the old school helmet without the ear flaps because he was grandfathered in. He didn't have to do that. So baseball does actually have a little bit of precedent for that.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm talking about. I mean, and you know, I don't want to be that guy. Again, Madden is being sarcastic here, saying it would be stupid to do all those things, just like it's stupid to have the slide rule, right? But there is a legitimate concern for some of them. There was a time in baseball, you know this, where batters didn't wear helmets. They didn't wear helmets until enough guys got hit in the head with pitches that they realized, oh my God, we're ending guys' careers with this, right? I would like to know, and I know they don't have stats on this because of the era, you know, before, but I would love to know the statistics of how many guys got hit in the head with pitches before they started wearing helmets. How many guys got knocked out of games? How many guys got knocked out for the season? How many guys got knocked out for their careers because of pitches around the head and that hit them in the head to the point where somebody said, you know, if this hat that's on my head was made of some kind of hard plastic or something, maybe it won't, you know, kill me. Maybe it won't kill me the next time I'm at the plate. I want a hat that's more helmet-like. Can we get one of those? Somebody said, yeah, that's a pretty damn good idea. And pretty soon, it's mandatory. And everybody does it. So would it be that stupid? Would it be that crazy of a radical idea if, in recognizing that people are getting hurt in the face a lot on pitches, somebody did say, let's just put a little face mask there. Why not? Women softball players do it. You know, there have been players who have been hit in the mouth who have done it, who have had deeper, farther down, you know, cheek and jaw protection on the pitcher side, you know, if they're a right-handed hitter on the left side of their helmet, et cetera. There have been people who have done it. Why not make it mandatory for all new players coming in? You know, anybody wants to do it now, and then any new players coming in starting in year X. And then, like I said, moving forward, everybody will say, do you? And you know what would happen, you guys? 75 years from now, hell, maybe 15 years from now, I don't know, people will look back at the 1970s and 80s and 90s and 20s and 2010s and 2020s. And do you know back then they didn't even protect their faces? I mean, seriously, no, they just had these regular single flap helmets that came down and didn't even protect their face. If you get hit right in the face, I mean, there's no helmet there. Can you imagine what it was like then? I wonder how many guys. And then they'll be doing that. They'll be doing what I just did when I said, I wonder, back in the pre-helmet days, maybe you guys can look up, when did it become mandatory to wear batting helmets in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I'm not sure on that date. It feels like it's got to be sometime in the 70s just by the Dave Winfield comment I made, but it might have been the late 60s. Let me check.
I feel like it would have been earlier, but I don't know for sure. But at any rate, they're going to be, and I said, I wonder how many people are gonna, I wonder how many, or excuse me, 10, 15, 20, 25, 35 years from now, people will be saying, I wonder how many people got hit in the face. And then if we did it 50 years from now, pitchers are all wearing helmets. I wonder how many people would look back and say, can you believe back in like the 2010s and 20, you know, teens, you know, in the early part of the turn of the century, these freaking Neanderthals, these pitchers just wore caps. They're caps. And they didn't stand behind screens like they do in batting practice or anything. I mean, they just had caps. They just get bing, line drive up the box, bing, bopping people on the brain. I mean, they'll look at us like we're cretins, like we're some sort of idiots. When protective equipment becomes available, when technology evolves, the protection of the players generally evolves with it. You know, technology, somehow, somebody realized that a hard plastic shell over the leather of the leather football helmet from back in the 30s and 40s, and I think that's about when, but the leather helmets that people wore weren't protecting their brains. Somebody said, let's put up a hard plastic shell over that. Okay. And then suddenly, you know, obviously we have the modern day helmet. when protective equipment is able to evolve technologically, it just makes sense for it to be used and implemented in these sports. Hockey did it with the helmet and the face shield. Baseball did it with the helmet for the batter. Baseball players, what do baseball players do when they continue to nip foul balls right down at their feet? They start wearing shin guards while they bat on their front foot, right? They wear that shin and ankle guard. I'm tired of driving the ball down into my ankle and my foot. It hurts. So they put something hard in plastic there. You know, catchers didn't used to have all the gear they have now. Somebody realized, holy crap, we could protect you better if we put all of this stuff on you. Well, you could protect the hitter better with a mask. You could protect the pitcher better with a helmet, too. At what point are people going to realize maybe that's the right thing to do? It's kind of funny. Joe Maddon started out with sarcasm here, and he's spot on with some of this stuff. But some of it, I'm taking the sarcasm away and saying I agree with. All right, it's coming up on 4 o'clock. We'll get a sports center coming your way, and we'll come back, get some phone calls. Also, Dennis Mandeloff joins us next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
375 again.
Hit well. Deep center. Back is Buxton at the wall. It's gone. Jason Kipnis with his first home run of the year, moving into the leadoff spot and instantly igniting the Indians here today. Drill. Deep center. Buxton. He's out of room. It's out of here. Lonnie Chisenhall's third home run of the year. A two-run missile. Santana slugs it. Deep left. Headed to the bleachers. Goodbye. Home run number 4 for Carlos Santana. So the flip-flop between Kipnis and Santana has played off handsomely here today. 3-1. Hit in the air right field. Back is Kepler. He's at the wall. It's gone! Jason Kipnis, a 2-out, 3-run homer.
We just did a lot of things today that we haven't been doing. Made for a fun day. We needed a day like that. Moving up to the leadoff spot, he knows how important that is there.
I think he knows, has a feel for when I'm coming around with my swing, just like I do. I think he saw what I did, and I think it's safe to say we were in need of a little shakeup before going into this game. Over the last week, we haven't been hitting the way any of us would like, so I thought we both felt it was the right time.
He just didn't muster up anything offensively. I mean, that's the truth of the week. We scored a run in the first off a couple hits. We got a couple hits the rest of the way. It's tough to win when you score a run. It happens during the course of the season. It happens to every team, even good offensive teams. It happened to us last year, and we were one of the better offensive teams. And this team's going to hit. I'm not even slightly worried about it.
Don't give me hyperbole, office-created rules, because I'm not into those things, as you guys well know, about reaching the bag. When you're sliding on dirt and you have momentum, you just keep going. I'm sorry, you just keep going. And there was no malicious intent there whatsoever, so I don't think it breaks the intent of injury. There's nothing to do with injury. The rule does not belong in the game.
My surge is very painful because I tweaked it before, the last time, the last shot I shot. It's hard to tell right now. Definitely couldn't go in that last third quarter of the 6 minutes. We'll see how I get better each day. Did he step under it, like a purpose? Yeah. No. He was contesting a shot. It was shot clock was coming down. I have to see the play.
A two-step lead with your foot closeout is not appropriate. It's dangerous. It's unsportsmanlike. It's just not what anybody does to anybody else. And this particular individual has a history with that kind of action. Totally unnatural closeout that the league has outlawed years ago and pays great attention to it. And Kawhi's not there. And you want to know how we feel about it. You want to know if that lessens our chances or not. We're playing very possibly the best team in the league. 9.75 people out of 10 would figure the Warriors will beat the Spurs. Well, we've had a pretty damn good season. We've played fairly well in the playoffs. We're up 23 points in the third quarter against Golden State. And Kawhi goes down like that. And you want to know if our chances are less? You want to know how we feel? That's how we feel.
Zaza's not a dirty player. I mean, you got to time that perfectly if you want to hurt somebody. I mean, we're not that type of team. Kawhi's an unbelievable player. We got nothing but respect for him. But he just tried to contest the shot, man. Guys were playing hard. It was an unfortunate situation. I wish it didn't happen. I don't think it was intentional. I mean, you can't listen to people on Twitter. They're irrational.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, I'll agree with Kevin Durant on that last part. You can't really listen to people on Twitter. They're irrational. They are. By their very nature, Twitter users are irrational. Welcome as we get into hour number two. It's 10 minutes after 4 on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, want to get back to the NBA discussion. We'll come back to Joe Maddon and the baseball thing a little bit later on, if you wish, and you can make that decision by dialing 866-240-1065. But for now, let's get back into the game one of the Western Conference Finals last night. Game number seven of the Eastern Conference Semifinals is tonight in Boston between the Wizards and the Celtics. And joining us now to break it down, our good friend Dennis Manilov, who is a sports writer in Cleveland, covering really all sports for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Northeast Ohio Media Group. Also the author of From A to Z, Andrews to Zastadil. D-Man, how you doing, my brother?
I'm fine. The great Bob France. It's always a pleasure.
I got to tell you, Dennis, I was talking about you in the first hour of the program.
Oh, and no. What did I do wrong?
Nothing at all. What you've done is kind of opened my eyes more to it as the years have gone by, that you have been hating on Greg Popovich. And the more I hear him speak to reporters, the more I have come over to your side on this. I've had more than enough of this pompous, egotistical condescension that he has for reporters who ask him very, very legitimate questions about his basketball team and the games they play. You originally, first time we talked about this where I disagreed with you somewhat, was about the in-game. You know, got to ask you a question on your way off the court into halftime, and, you know, he hates being stopped and interrupted for those, and I've always thought that the use of sideline reporters for such things was so unnecessary, and I didn't blame him for just showing his disdain for the process. But that's very different. First of all, I've come to agree with you on that, too, because he just goes over the top with his disdain. But like I was watching last night, and I know he's angry, and I know he's upset about what happened to Kawhi, and we just played some of it right there. But the condescension of, you want to know how I feel about losing Kawhi and how it's going to affect our chances, as if, you know, as if the reporter shouldn't have asked such a stupid question when it's an obvious and necessary question. I guess what I'm saying, D-Man, is I apologize for questioning you on Popovich because I can't stand the guy either anymore.
Well, incredibly, though, Bob, I actually, you know, of the two of those teams, I dislike San Antonio less.
Ditto.
So I would actually want San Antonio to win. They're not only not going to win, they're going to get swept, and the Leonard injury seals it. Here's the thing, Bob. I want to pivot off of that for a second, though. I don't think the Golden State Warriors lose a playoff game until potentially number 15 out of 16. The first road game they play against the Eastern Conference opponent is their most vulnerable. If they win that game, it's entirely possible that the Warriors go 16-0 in the postseason. Because once you go up 3-0 in that situation, I don't care if you're playing Cleveland, Boston, or Washington, you're going to win the fourth game because the other team's going to pack it in. So it's astonishing to me that the Warriors can potentially go 16-0, but the stars have aligned for that to be possible.
Clearly you would not have said this, right, had Kawhi not come down on Pachulia. I mean, they were up 23
well,
at the time, and they were outscored. I'm sorry?
I think they would have lost game one, so it would have been a moot point, yes.
Right, that's my point. My point, not only do you think they're going to swing, I mean, well, let me, I don't want to put words in your mouth, I'll ask you. If Kawhi had finished that game healthy, and they hold, which I certainly believe they would have, their 23-point lead at the 7-minute mark of the third quarter, you know, as it stands, they gave up all 23 and lost by two, so it was a 25-2, you know, change in terms of lead by the time it was over. So had they held on and won, would you have predicted, Dennis, Warriors in five, they'll just win the next four? Or do you think now we've got a legit series here that could go six or seven?
I would have said six or seven, and most likely six. I could have seen a split in San Antonio. As well, you know, the split in the first two, the split in the next two, and then Golden State finishing it off in six and, if necessary, seven. But, yeah, that's how the Kawhi Leonard injury affects things. I'll say this. I'm talking about the Warriors potentially clean sheeting the playoffs because I have respect for their talent, all right?
Sure.
That is, I must get that out of the way. Even though I dislike the Warriors, I can't stand Green. I can't stand all their preening and their arrogance and their semi-dirty play.
Wait. Why'd you stick semi in there?
Well, yeah. I mean, exactly.
With legit. I mean, because I'm calling it that way, Dennis, the way that it is.
Yeah.
Between Draymond Green and all of his cheap stuff, and obviously the Pachulia thing, which I'll ask you more specifically about in a moment.
Yeah.
But I think they're a very, very dirty team, and I don't even think they hide it anymore.
Yeah, and they've been exposed for that over the last two postseasons. People have actually seen it because they used to be, you know, the lovable Warriors that ran up and down the court and shot threes. But the more you watch them, the more they were under the microscope, the more you saw how physical they like to get, how they like to push people, shove people, illegal screen people, illegal, you know, whatever people. So, yeah, you're right. I probably shouldn't have added the qualifier semi. But the reason I did was I don't want it to sound like this is sour grapes. And, by the way, why would it be sour grapes from a Cleveland writer who watched the Cavaliers win last year? It's not like the Warriors won the last two titles. And I'm sitting here whining about it.
Sure.
What I'm saying, though, is the Warriors look tremendous to me. They look unbeatable. How, having said that, they're the luckiest team I've seen in the playoffs in a long time. When you go back to the 2015 playoffs and even the 16 playoffs and now the 17, it's amazing how the opponents they get are banged up time and time and time and time again. The opponent they get is banged up, except for the 2016 Cavaliers, who were healthy, and they managed to beat them. I mean, the Cavs did. So,
sure.
But, it, you know, here's another case where you wish the Spurs could be whole. As much as I dislike Popovich, I could envision a Spurs upset victory in a series with a healthy Tony Parker and a healthy Kawhi Leonard. But lo and behold, the Warriors, you know, and it's not the Warriors' fault in some cases.
Right. No, so a lot of them they just lucked into. Even last year's Clipper series, you know, with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin both out. I mean, Jesus. You know, I don't mean to take your name, but in all seriousness, they do. They just, you know, it's like they were born under a lucky star or something because they just lucked into a lot of those. But to this particular one, Dennis, let's go ahead and talk about Pachulia and the issue about whether this was a dirty play or not. Now, Jim Kushlin and I have been looking this up all day, trying to find the actual wording in the NBA rulebook that says you must provide a place for an offensive player to land when he jumps up for a shot. You're not allowed to occupy the space underneath him. I don't see it anywhere, but I hear experts all day long saying it's in the rules, it's in the rules, it's in the rules. I don't know what the rules say because I can't find that, but is a player like Pachulia, if he's rushing forward to close out on a jump shot and his momentum does carry him underneath that player, is he violating the rules if he doesn't actually foul him, meaning hit him, but the guy just lands on top of his foot on the way down?
Well, I have to believe he is. Listen, Bob, Pachulia knows what he's doing, okay? He knows.
So you think that was intentional? You agree with Popovich on that point? I'm just trying to evaluate it objectively here. I'm not saying he is or he isn't. I just wanted to know what you think because I have seen guys close out and they kind of take that one extra step before they were able to slow down and turn around and go back and look at the shot and see if they can board or whatever. I'm not saying this guy did or didn't. You think for sure, based on the frustration in your voice, it was definitely intentional to stick his leg underneath Kawhi Leonard for the purposes of Leonard falling over it.
My opinion, yes. Okay. I don't want to get, you know.
That's fine. That's all I'm asking for is your opinion. That's okay.
But here's what else, Bob, is interesting. Yeah. If you watch Pachulia over the course of his NBA career, strange incidents involving, shall we say, guys tweaking ankles or banging knees seem to follow this guy, all right, as Popovich alluded to. So, you know, if it were somebody else, maybe I'd be willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, but Pachulia has, in my opinion, based on my eyes, a history of getting involved in borderline activity.
Now, do you think, Dennis Manilov, that players like that are dirty from the intent down? Like, in other words, it is in their mindset, I'm going to do what I got to do to win. And that means I got to hurt people in some way. I got to bang knees with some guy. I got to stick my foot under a guy when he's in the air. Or is it incidental where it's just like these things happen? Like some say J.J. – or not J.J. Redick. Boy, talk about the Duke crossover there. Grayson Allen. Yeah, the Grayson Allen tripping thing where – I don't know that he goes into a given play saying, I'm going to hurt somebody here, or I'm going to kick somebody here, or I'm going to trip somebody here, yet he keeps doing it, almost reflexively. Draymond Green tried to say, I'm not intentionally kicking people in the nads either. That's what happens when I shoot. My leg kicks up. It's incidental. So do you think that guys like that are just somehow, you know, afflicted with this? Or are they thinking, in Pachulia's case, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to get under his legs? I'm going to go out here and I'm going to cave in the side of his knee, that sort of thing.
I like what you said, afflicted with. I'm going to go with that one. I mean, I want to give an NBA player, no matter how dirty I think that player is, the benefit of the doubt that he's not going to go into a game and try to intentionally hurt another player. Because if that is the case, if that's the mindset, then that NBA player can expect his career is not going to last very long. All right, if you go in thinking, I'm going to hurt somebody. But there is what you said, afflicted with sort of reckless, mindless behavior where you do say, I'm going to push the limits. And if someone gets hurt, oh, well, you know, that's your mindset. As opposed to I'm going to hurt you. You're saying if an effect of my physical play hurts you, then sorry about that. And the Eastern equivalent right now to me is Kelly Olynyk. Okay, that's a guy who, you know, his defenders, if you're on his team, that's just Kelly. He doesn't have a mean bone in his body. He's out there playing hard, and he has to play hard in order to keep his spot on the court. But you watch what Olynyk does. I mean, he's always up to something. He's always grabbing something, pulling something, kicking something. I don't think he.
Let me get in on that a little, Dennis, before you continue that, because I'll challenge you to a slight extent on that, because that pick that led what was his name to spear him essentially. I looked at that six different ways from Sunday, and I saw a hard pick. That's it. I didn't see anything cheap. I didn't see anything that was excessive. I didn't see any knee to the groin while doing the pick. I mean, it was all, to me, the one and only time that I can say Kelly Olynyk is a dirty player is what he did to Love 2 years ago. I haven't seen anything to build a reputation there, especially one that would justify a guy with a reputation like Draymond Green last week and is saying, man, that Kelly Olynyk is a dirty player.
Well, I saw that replay too several times, Bob, and I guess I go in because of how angry I still am with Olynyk about the Love situation.
Okay.
That he got away with.
So no benefit of the doubt for him, basically.
One game suspension. Yeah, he's and even before the Love situation, I didn't like Olynyk as a player, and then after that, it sealed it for me. Okay, this guy is dirty pool. What I saw in the replay, yes, I heard a lot of people say, "Oh, clean, 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 hard physical basketball." But you watch his right shoulder at the very end, and there's a little bit of a forward lean dip type of thing, in my opinion. Now, some people say, oh, you're just looking for it. Well, maybe. But I saw a shoulder that was going to make sure that it made contact with something above the neck, okay? And not a shoulder shimmy, not an absolute blast, but enough of a tweak of the shoulder, a turn of the shoulder to, and I think that's what Obrey was reacting to. He was tired of getting popped in the head. That was the second time because Olynyk knew he had a height advantage. He knows his height advantage there. So he's like, okay, when I set a screen on this guy, I'm going to be able to make contact with him above the neck. And hopefully I won't be able to get called or I won't get called for it because of my height advantage. And so I think that's what set, you know, the Wizards player off. But I mean, I could definitely listen to the argument that it was that particular play was clean, but because of Olynyk's style and what he's done in the past, I'm not going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I got you, and that's fair game. And you know what? Let's transition. Let's use the Olynyk part of our conversation that started, of course, with Zaza Pachulia to talk about the Celtics tonight. Game 7, John Wall and the Wizard. I mean, this has been talk about Jekyll and Hyde. Both teams, really. They've had games where they just were tremendous and then games where they flat out no-showed. It was obviously the Wizards' turn to close it out in Game 6. John Wall did that. They're four-point underdogs. The game is in Boston. Talking about the Wizards, they are four-point underdogs. I feel like they still should have momentum based on that Game 6 victory at home. I still feel like Washington is probably the better team and that probably might give the Cavaliers a tougher road on their way to another sweep. But it is in Boston, and Vegas says Boston by 4. What say you?
I think Boston will win it. I don't see any reason why the home court can't hold for the final game after it's held up for the first six. Granted, Washington feels like it let at least one of those games in Boston get away. Well, tough and too bad. You lost them for a reason, because you know, you didn't execute. So I expect the same. It should be a battle. I don't anticipate a blowout for the Celtics, but I anticipate a close game that the Celtics pull out late. They use their physicality and their tricks and their tactics to slow the Wizards down enough in order to pull it out.
What do you make of this series and what you've seen from these two things? The question I asked, or I kind of answered myself, I guess. I said I think the Wizards would give the Cavaliers a little more trouble, perhaps, in getting a sweep. I don't think to win the series, but I mean just to stopping them from giving Cleveland their first playoff loss. You were just talking about that with Golden State. Have you seen anything from either team that would lead you to believe that one or the other might take a game or two from the Cavaliers?
Yes, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic, negative net or whatever. I know in Cleveland right now, it's easy to feel great about the Cavs. And, 8-0 is 8-0. I mean, you are what your record says you are. But I remember not so long ago where the Cavs were having issues defensively at the end of the regular season. I know that it's different now in the postseason. They have upped their level of play, whatever you want to call it, switch, whatnot. But they've definitely taking their level of play up a notch at both ends. However, in the Indiana series, it wasn't smooth sailing to a sweep. And in the Raptors series, they were, fortunate, I think, that they didn't have to deal with Lowry in the Air Canada Center. So, speaking of teams that got a break, I mean, the Cavs definitely got a break with Lowry getting hurt in the middle of that series. So, in other words, I don't think all of the Cavaliers' warts that seemed to develop over the last couple of months of the season have been eradicated. And therefore they are vulnerable to a bad game. I don't think if they get down big against the Celtics or the Wizards, they can expect to come back on them like they did the Pacers, as an example. So I can see either one of those teams giving the Cavs a series. And certainly if Boston is the opponent and Boston has home court, and Boston comes out and punches Cleveland in the mouth in game one, then all of a sudden, people are going to start doubting the Cavs. All it'll take is one game. People will say, oh, what about the Cavs? Or, they were supposed to walk to the finals. And then who knows what happens from there. So I would think the team that could give the Cavs more issues simply because of the home court is the Celtics.
The obvious question whenever you have a situation like this, Dennis, I don't mean to be talk show host guy with this rest or rust, but it's 8 games in 37 days. An unbelievably long period of time between games. I mean, 8 games in 37 days. You don't get into a rhythm like that. I don't care how hard you practice or what kind of tricks LeBron James has from his history of, waiting after sweeps and so on and so forth, or whatever Ty Lue can do. It's hard to keep your rhythm and your momentum when you play 8 times in 37 days. Does it affect them? Come Wednesday night.
Yeah, I think it will, especially if it's on the road, I mean, if I'm coming off of a long layoff, I would much rather have the familiar court, the familiar rims, the familiar depth perception, the sight lines, the lighting, all that stuff that goes into, why home teams are better than road teams, why you shoot better at home than you do on the road. So if I were the Cavs, I'd much prefer, the home court against the Wizards, even though, as you say, the Wizards pose problems. They have a tremendous backcourt in Wall and Beal. Wall would be on a mission if he got past the Celtics tonight. He would obviously be on a mission, so he'd be difficult to to deal with. And they've got some physicality too, and they got a badass in Markieff Morris and a big man that the Cavs would probably struggle with a little bit in Gortat. So the Wizards can cause problems for the Cavs too, but yeah, I think the Cavs are going to have to overcome a little bit of rust here, and perhaps it only takes them a quarter to get their sea legs, but that quarter could result in, you know, I don't know, 12, 14-point deficit somewhere, and next thing you know, you're scrambling. So they have to just figure out a way to get through it.
Talking to Dennis Mandeloff, a little NBA playoff analysis. Last thing, Dennis, Steph Curry had 40. I think Durant had 34. Kawhi had 26 in 23 minutes and was killing the Warriors. It was a nightmare for them trying to deal with him. He had 26 and 8 rebounds in 23 minutes before he went down. If I was to ask you who the second best player left in the playoffs is, and if you want to consider Isaiah Thomas, if you want to consider John Wall, you may. If you want to consider Kyrie Irving, you may. But I just gave you the three names that were on my mind, Durant, Curry, Leonard, based on what you've seen. Who is it?
I would say Durant. I would rank him, assuming you're saying left in the playoffs as in Kawhi.
Left in the playoffs.
Unavailable.
Left in the playoffs right now. No, not even. I mean, don't count Kawhi's injury against him. He was playing yesterday like, to me, not only in my opinion, was he playing like the second best player after LeBron James in the playoffs yesterday. He's pushing LeBron James on both ends of the floor to be that guy. I mean, he is just such a game-changing, difference-making, franchise-carrying. And if, you know, because what happened yesterday, Dennis, with Kawhi, in my opinion, and I'll let you make your case for Durant in 2 seconds, but what happened yesterday was very LeBron-esque. You know, when LeBron leaves the Cavaliers lineup, despite the talent that remains without him there, we've seen how far the Cavaliers can fall off a cliff. Kawhi Leonard left the game yesterday up 23 with 7 minutes left in the third, and they collapsed. There was nothing that they could do without him, offensively, defensively, in any way, shape, or form. It was very LeBron. The Spurs minus Kawhi looked like the Cavs with minus LeBron, even though LeBron has, you know, Kyrie and Love and JR and Korver and et cetera left behind. That's the difference that Kawhi Leonard seems to make for these Spurs. And that's why, to me, that gap is closing. Not necessarily because LeBron is falling off. Clearly he is not. But because Kawhi Leonard is getting so much better, he's pushing everybody else to say, I'm the second best player in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I would put LeBron clearly number one, and then a close second for Durant, edging for second place, Kawhi. And then probably fourth would be Steph Curry, because he's done it, he's won a title, he's been in a multi-MVP, and then John Wall after that in the five hole. As far as remaining guys, maybe Isaiah 6 and a couple of the Warriors 7-8. But, yeah, I mean, you could definitely make a case that Kawhi is as good, if not better, than Durant. But I've just seen too much good Durant lately. I mean, you know, you talk about the recency bias. I mean, every time I watch the Warriors, it seems like Durant is dominating somewhere, somehow. And he's capable at both ends, too. He's so long and so agile. And, and he's got a mean streak in him, which is valuable at this time of year. So, I would put Durant and, you know, just ahead of Kawhi for second place behind LeBron as far as remaining talent in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's a good analogy. And Durant, by the way, to the point about playing on both ends of the floor, the minute he joined the Warriors, to me, he became the best defensive player they had, not named Draymond Green. I mean, he has been a shot blocker this season. When he's been healthy, of course, he had a couple of stints where he was out. But he has been a shot blocker, a rim protector, the kind of thing that you don't normally think of, one of the game's great scorers of his era. And by the time he's done, one of the game's great scorers of all time, as being a rim protector. But because of that 7'3" wingspan of his, he has. He alters shots. He changes shots. He's able to reach and play passing lanes as well. He's been a tremendous defensive player, which I think you have to be able to be considered, you know, one of the top two or three players in the NBA. Obviously, LeBron James can lock down anybody whenever he wants to. He doesn't always want to. It's one of my biggest knocks on LeBron James. He takes a lot of games off defensively. But when he wants to, geez, I mean, he's tremendous. And so is Kawhi Leonard, who's already been a defensive player of the year. Draymond Green will be the defensive player of the year this year. So, you know, but Kevin Durant playing the other end of the floor, too, really, really bolsters the argument you're making for him. All right. Hey, D-Man, great stuff. Any final thoughts on the playoffs, where we are now? And by the way, I'm so annoyed with the NBA scheduling. The fact that Game 1 will not be played until Wednesday, and, of course, Game 1 of the Western Conference was played last night. Why didn't they have this game, tonight's game, go yesterday so that they could play Game 1 tomorrow night, Tuesday night, and make it just a little bit closer, the Game 1s of the respective conference finals, to one another than what they're going to be?
I agree with you. I don't know why that is. I'm sure they have their explanations, but... It is, yeah. It's unfortunate.
You think about TV, yeah, right? You think about TV, but they could easily have had the Boston Washington game at 7 o'clock. It's East Coast that game, and you know, put on the Dubs and the Spurs at 10 o'clock. Maybe they just didn't like the idea of them playing at 10 o'clock in the East Coast. I guess I don't know. Or seven. Yeah, it would be 10 o'clock in the East Coast.
Agreed. I don't know. It doesn't make for good theater to me.
No, it doesn't. It's just dragging these things out too long. The Cavaliers' rust, like I said, and you discussed, is already going to be rough, and it's just only going to be worse. They only haven't played until Wednesday now. Dennis Manilov, great analysis as always, my friend. Thanks very much for your time. We'll talk again.
Thanks, Bob.
You got it. All right, it's 4:36. Don't forget, congratulations. Check it out online at 1065theticket.com. Check out the winner on our Busted Driveway contest. Technically, we called it the ugliest driveway contest from Buck Brothers and ESPN 106.5. The ticket, we ask you to send us a picture of your ugly driveway, and the winner was going to get a brand new driveway from Buck Brothers and the ticket, and that winner is indeed Tom Haggerty of Maumee. Tom Haggerty of Maumee won the driveway. You can see his busted driveway online at 1065theticket.com, and when it's done, you'll see the new one there as well to see the before and after, and we're back right after this on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob Frantz Extravaganza on 106.5, The Ticket.
Indeed. And getting close to wrapping it up. It's 4:44, 16 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you. Then we're going to turn it over for drive time. Mr. Mike Miller, he'll get you home or wherever it is that you might be going from 5 o'clock until 6. Thanks again to Dennis Manilov for bringing down a few things. By the way, Frank Gargano. Greg Popovich has indeed ruled Kawhi Leonard as, quote, likely out for game number 2. He's supposed to have an MRI today. Did you catch the results of that? I don't see that in the report that I have in front of me.
I haven't seen anything about it. I'm going to look it up right now to triple check. But, yeah, you know what? It's just the whole situation is just a shame. You know, you want to see all the best stars in the playoffs. And you would have gotten what could have been, like, one of the best playoff series ever, because you know Golden State would have lost that game and they would have had to come back and respond. We could have had a 7-game series, Bob.
No doubt. No doubt. I mean, and possibly even an upset. I mean, the Spurs are no joke.
No.
You need to understand that just because the Warriors have been as great as they have been the last 2 years, you know, last season, of course, the 73 victories, I mean, it obviously it's a big, big deal. And this year, you know, pushing up there again by adding Kevin Durant, for crying out loud. I mean, it's just, you know, adding Kevin Durant to a team that won 73 games and made it to the, you know, Game 7 of the NBA Finals is pretty doggone amazing. To win another 67 games this year, people look at Golden State and just think they're gods, and therefore everybody else is less than godlike, and they suck. The Spurs don't suck. The Spurs rested everybody their last 3 games and lost their last 3 games, and guess what? Still had 61 wins. They could have been 64-18 to the Warriors' 67-15. That's pretty damned good. As Popovich said in his rant, we've had a pretty damn good season, and he has. And it's the reason is he's got a pretty damn good team there. Kawhi Leonard, when LaMarcus Aldridge is right, Tony Parker is out. We know that. But for some people, and I've talked to analysts even on this program, who have said it's not necessarily a terrible blow to the Spurs that Tony Parker is out. And the reason why is Tony Parker is getting up there in years. He is not what he once was, in the same way that neither is Ginobili, mm-hmm. and neither was Duncan toward the end. And on the defensive end, he can be quite a liability, especially against a Spurs team, or excuse me, against a Warriors team that has so much, you know, perimeter talent. And some have said that Patty Mills being, you know, getting the bulk of the playing time now instead of being the backup there is actually an improvement. So the Parker-Mills issue notwithstanding, This is a 60, what would be a 64-win team with maybe the second-best player in the world in Kawhi Leonard playing at an extraordinarily high level. I'm not saying a Game 1 win guarantees a Spurs victory in the series, but it sure as hell puts it in doubt, whereas now with him out for Game 2 and possibly beyond, now I don't think it is in doubt anymore.
No, and they're definitely just trying to get Kawhi back up to par. I did look it up. He did undergo an MRI last night, but they are not releasing it to the press as of now. So,
okay.
Still looking forward for more information on that.
So they're calling it, they're calling him, Popovich is calling him likely out for Game 2, likely being the word there. I want to play a clip here in answer to the question, and it's up on Twitter. I told everybody we put it up there on Twitter. Oh, you know what? I didn't hit post. My bad. My apologies. I got to put the poll up there. Was the Zaza Pachulia closeout on Kawhi Leonard a dirty play or an accident? Here's an answer to that question from former Michigan star and 13-year NBA star Jalen Rose. He said, absolutely it was the dirty play. And how does he know? Because he has done it himself.
San Antonio Spurs were definitely in control. Kawhi Leonard gets injured, goes out of the game. They were up 23. You got to give the Golden State Warriors credit for what happened in the second half. But as somebody, and I'm not proud to say this, that actually Kobe Bryant went up for a jump shot.
Yeah.
And I stuck my foot underneath him.
Yeah.
When he landed on, so he can land on it.
Right.
And try to give my team an opportunity to win.
And give him a sprained ankle.
I am the person that should say, yeah, Zaza Pachulia or anybody that does that, that should be a flagrant foul. Yeah. Because you know what Kawhi's dealing with. You know he got injured with it earlier in the game. And you still continue to do it. So it's really unfortunate and it may swing the series.
And his colleagues there on the set, by the way, said, of course you know then, because you're a dirty player. Jalen Rose admitted to being a dirty player. And he's saying he admits that it should be a flagrant foul, and he did it to Kobe Bryant. Again, I just asked Dennis Maniloff, who's a sports writer who covers this stuff, if he's aware of the rules. I asked Jim Cushlin, Frank, before the show today.
Yeah.
I said, can you find for me the text in the NBA rulebook that says you must leave room or space for an offensive player taking a shot to come down after
right.
he jumps? And he can't find it. And I looked, and I can't find it. And yet I'm listening to national TV guys today saying it's in the rules. It's in the rules. Is it? I don't see it.
I was going to say, I think everybody here has looked for that rule, and nobody's been able to see it. You would think right after this all went down, you would be able to Google search it, and you would just have article upon article with the quote coming up, but there's
right.
nothing.
Right, but now they're just saying, well, you can't do that. Well, are you sure you can't do that? Now, from a spirit of the rule book standpoint, and maybe even a spirit of competition standpoint, you should say it is a rule, but maybe it's an unwritten one. You don't go under somebody who's in the air, because when they come down, they could get hurt or they could hurt you. You have to give them room to land. You would think it's something that doesn't need to be in the rule book. But if it isn't there and it is only the unwritten rule, then somebody didn't write it down, they dropped the ball, because and then you're okay, you're allowed to do it. If you don't hit him, hurt him, you didn't like, it's not like while he's in the air, you literally hit his legs, therefore knocking his legs out from underneath him and making him fall flat.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about just you getting your body under his body, and wherever he lands, he lands. And that's not your fault. That's gravity's fault. You know?
Right.
If it's not in the rules like that, I don't know exactly what they mean when they say it's part of the rules. They established these rules a long time ago.
Well, here's the problem. It just leaves everything open to interpretation. I mean, yes, it is. It can be conceived as dirty because, obviously, I mean, it did cause an injury. But at the same time, it's as simple as, you know, he could have gone in for the extra step. This is the conference final, after all. He's just occupying space, but the fact that we can't find the rule is a lot of red flags for whoever made
yeah.
these rules, and here we are. It's all open to interpretation.
You know, in college in particular, in the NBA, they give them a lot more leeway about hanging on the rim, you know, after a dunk.
Right.
I mean, you can still get a T if you really, really start doing chin-ups on it, you know, that sort of thing, or swinging your body with your legs from one side to the other. I mean, if you go crazy, they'll get you. But in college, they get you more. If you don't dunk and let go of that rim and come down
right away,
you're going to get a T. And what is the one exception, Frank Argano, where you don't get a T? And there is an exception.
If somebody's underneath the basket.
Bingo. If landing is not clear because somebody else is under you and coming down could hurt you or them, then you are free to hang on that rim until that space is cleared beneath you, and then you can let go and come down. Referees are instructed to give that kind of a ruling, or not give the ruling. What am I trying to say? To
judgment.
Give the player the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, to make that judgment based on whether or not it was safe or not for the individual to come down. And so that kind of gives credence to the, well, it's in the rules. You have to give the offensive player, you know, a landing space, or else, you know, it's considered a foul. I don't necessarily think they're apples to apples, because again, we're talking about hanging on the rim, and you can make that decision. But at least it gives you some, you know, perhaps idea of that, yes, it is in the rules. It might not be written anywhere, but it is said that you can't undercut somebody like that to the point where them landing is going to cause an injury. And so maybe Greg Popovich is right on that front. Let's listen again to the surly one.
The situation where you're also considering Kawhi's long-term future when you decide whether he plays or not.
That's why we sat him in the Houston series, because we weren't sure. We weren't sure, you know, what this injury was. And we did the same thing with Tim Duncan early in his career in the Phoenix series. He could have played in that playoff, and I sat him because he had a great future ahead of him. So... we'll see. We'll see what the MRI says, but, you know, obviously he won't play tomorrow.
Yeah, that was not the clip that I was looking for there, but you heard what he said there, by the way. Obviously he will not play tomorrow. Frank, that takes the likely out, and he just said obviously.
Yeah.
The headline, the ESPN report is Leonard likely out for game two, Pop says. Pop rips Zaza, or Zaza, depending on how you want to say it. But he didn't say likely in that clip. He said,
no,
obviously he will not play tomorrow. Obviously. So that's a little bit different.
No, and I definitely think it's the right move. You got to get your superstar time to rest, and let's just call it what it is. The Spurs are a damn good team. Even without Kawhi, they're going to put up at least a little bit of a fight against the Warriors. I'm not saying they're going to go out.
Are you sure you can say that now after they put up no fight whatsoever when he went out yesterday? What, were they just still in shock? Because they were up 23 and lost the game. They were up 23, not in the first quarter, but there's a lot of time. They're up 23 or 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. So I don't know if I'm going to agree with you on the, well, they're a damn good team that can put up a fight without him. Last night they put up no fight without him whatsoever for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I honestly, and this is, again, just a gut feeling, I don't think they're going to get absolutely destroyed. I could totally be wrong. But I think they're going to come up with some game plan to where they at least hang it around in this game for a little bit.
Well, you know what? You know what else we can look at possibly saying in this regard is that it doesn't matter to Greg Popovich whether Kawhi plays, because if Kawhi does not play and they lose, the odds were they weren't supposed to be up 23 and eventually, or actually 25 yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you were supposed to lose the first two in Golden State. That's just, you're the underdog. They're the home team. They're the 67-win team, blah, blah, blah. You're supposed to lose the first two anyway. And if you're going to win, if you're going to beat them and you're going to go to the finals, you're going to have to win a game on Golden State's floor at some point, but it isn't necessarily going to be one of those first two. So he could just say, look, we may take our lumps in game two, but at the end of it all, if Kawhi is healthy, for games 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, all we are is where we were supposed to be, down 0-2 and going to our building. We win twice there, and we're fine, and we're good to go. Now it's a best of three, and Kawhi is healthy, and we like our chances. So maybe that's the best way to approach it rather than try to rush him back.
No, absolutely. It's definitely the way to go. It's almost like you're punting away. No, you're, like you said, you're going to take your lumps in game two. This is what everybody expected. Nobody expected them to be even close to winning that first game, so... Get Kawhi healthy. I mean, it all depends on that MRI. It could be way worse than what we think. I think he'll be okay to play in game three, and that's what I'm hoping for. But, yeah, definitely have to sit him. No question.
For anybody interested in seeing what Greg Popovich was talking about, which when he said that Zaza Pachulia has a history of this, and he started running down some of the plays, there's a really, really great piece on ForTheWin.com that I found during the show today, and I posted that on our Twitter feed as well. Take a look at Sports Radio 106.5 on Twitter. You can vote on whether or not Pachulia's play was dirty or accidental, and then, as I say, you can also vote on whether or not, or not, sorry, not vote on, you can also take a look at the Pachulia history there. Just for some background, as Popovich was talking about, to see if maybe this guy does not deserve the benefit of the doubt because of a history. And that's where we're going to have to leave it this afternoon. Thanks so much for being a part of the program. Do not forget, Drive Time is coming up next with Mike Miller, so you've got no reason to go anywhere. Stay right here and keep it locked on. We're back tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza. We will react to game number one tonight between the Celtics and the Wizards. And we'll, of course, look forward then to the matchup between the winner and the Cavaliers, which will start on Wednesday. So until we talk again tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, have yourself a great afternoon. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.